In 2018, the Royal College of Ophthalmologists released new guidelines on screening for chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine retinopathy in response to the increased use of the drugs, which have long been known to cause significant ocular side effects. The new guidelines make specific recommendations on the techniques and timing of baseline and follow-up screening tests using techniques familiar to optometrists. To understand the importance of these drugs, dermatologist Dr. Sharon Blackford answers our questions. So, Sharon, thank you for joining us. Chloroquine is perhaps best known as a treatment for malaria. So why is chloroquine, and more specifically, the associated hydroxychloroquine, now being increasingly used in medicine?
It's a drug that's been around, obviously, for many, many years. Better known, obviously, for treating malaria, but there's a wide variety of inflammatory skin diseases that it can be helpful for. So main one being lupus, but there are other similar inflammatory conditions and scalp conditions where people will lose their hair if they're not treated. We mainly use hydroxychloroquine because it's better tolerated. Some patients can't tolerate that, and so you would try chloroquine instead. They're old-fashioned drugs, but they're really useful because the alternatives for many of these conditions are either long-term steroids, which have lots of other side effects, or immunosuppressant drugs. The main group of people that prescribe antimalarials are dermatologists and rheumatologists. It's used in arthritis as well as lupus. The types of conditions we're treating with hydroxychloroquine are very chronic. The main group of patients that are people with chronic skin disease. So most patients will suffer it for their whole lifetime once they develop the condition. So they may need to stay on hydroxychloroquine for years and years, their whole lifetime, basically. What we try and do is reduce the dose in the winter so that they perhaps have a drug holiday in the winter to minimise the cumulative dose. But there are some patients who have to stay on a lower dose in the winter and just up the dose in the summer. So it's the cumulative dose that's important in terms of the ocular side effects. The important thing is, of course, that if the ocular side effects happen, they can be permanent. And so it is obviously devastating if patients do suffer retinopathy, maculopathy, because they'll lose vision permanently, potentially. And so, you know, it is something we've always been aware of.
What's your recommended action when prescribing these drugs according to the new RCO guidelines?
When we're just starting patients off on them for the first few weeks, we wouldn't necessarily refer to ophthalmology at that point because you don't know if the patient's going to stay on it long term. Once you've got a patient established on treatment and you think they're going to be on it, then we're referring to ophthalmology for screening. It's possible that patients will have been started on these drugs previously by specialists, but have now their GPs are prescribing it regularly on repeat prescription, and they may not be under the care of a specialist anymore if they're well controlled. And so those patients may get missed out from being referred for screening. That's where I think optometrists can really be helpful in taking a drug history when they see patients. And anybody who is on hydroxychloroquine and hasn't been referred for the screening should be.
Thank you, Sharon. And now for the ophthalmic point of view, we go to Dr. Tariq Aslam. Tariq, thank you for talking to us. Can you briefly outline the ocular impacts of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine? Are they the same for both of them?
Chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine are both from the same family of drugs known as the quinolones. Their exact mechanism is not known, but they are thought to affect the metabolism of retinal photoreceptor cells and also bind to melanin in the retinal pigment epithelial cells, causing toxicity. Chloroquine is used a lot less these days, but is more toxic. Hydroxychloroquine is much more commonly prescribed, but the guidelines refer to both drugs.
Prior to the recently introduced guidelines, was there any mechanism for screening the retinas of patients using these drugs?
Yes, prior to the current guidelines, there was a large amount of evidence from different sources. We knew, for example, that there was no one single outcome measure that would be useful for screening against hydroxychloroquine retinopathy, and multiple measures might be needed. We knew that age of patient and the amount of time they'd been on the drug was important. And there's been some recent evidence from the United States suggesting that the prevalence of hydroxychloroquine retinopathy was greater than we previously thought. The old mechanisms were very varied depending on who you were and where you worked, and there wasn't one unified system. Up till this, there was the British guidelines, which were relatively less interventional, and then there was the American guidance, which was more interventional. And then there were research papers dotted here and there as well, so there wasn't a single globally sort of respected system that everybody used. It used to be thought that tests like color vision Ishihara tests might be useful. It used to be thought like that things like Amsler grids might be useful. Those are no longer thought to be useful. What the recent guidance has done is essentially brought together all the latest areas of evidence into one place so that we now have a single robust source of information upon which to base our screening.
What do the new guidelines recommend for screening?
So the overall principle of the new guidelines is to try and detect the retinopathy before the patient detects it. And the principle is that once it's detected and once it's there, it's likely to be irreversible and can sometimes actually even carry on even when you stop the medication. And the second important thing that they try and achieve is to not stop treatment unnecessarily, recognizing the importance and the benefits that hydroxychloroquine can give to patients. The new guidelines recommend two things. Firstly, baseline screening. And they recommend baseline screening for all patients who are due to be started on long-term hydroxychloroquine treatment, preferably within the first 6 months of that treatment. After baseline screening, when patients have been on treatment for 5 years, they should have regular yearly screening tests. Those screening tests to be done each year are visual fields 10-2, spectral domain OCT scanning, and wide field autofluorescence.
What does autofluorescence imaging and OCT scanning of the macula detect in cases of macular toxicity?
Autofluorescence detects levels of hyperautofluorescence initially when there's possible signs of damage, and in the later stages you get darkening, so you get hypoautofluorescence. And this is seen not right at the center of the fovea, but pericentrally, just around the center. Similarly, in spectral domain OCT scanning, you get thinning or disruption of the OCT just near to the center of the fovea, especially in the photoreceptor zones and the interdigitation zones. Also, on the OCT, you get impact and disruption and degeneration of the retinal pigment epithelial cells. But what this guideline reiterates is that one scan on its own and absence of symptoms isn't enough to rule out toxicity. So that same person might, on an autofluorescence, have had signs of deficit and also have had signs of deficit on a visual field test. There's potential for danger there.
What's the course of action when you identify maculopathic changes likely to have been caused by using the drug?
The impact of hydroxychloroquine has been separated by the new guidelines into three areas. Either no impact at all, i.e. all the tests look okay, or possible impact, and finally, definite toxicity. Possible impact allows for patients to still continue on this very useful and life-changing drug if there's no definite signs of retinopathy, and that has been really useful. In terms of definite impact, i.e. if we find that on two different tests that somebody has signs of retinopathy, then it is indicated that the drug should be stopped. The ophthalmologist does not stop the drug themselves, but recommends to the physician that the drug is discontinued after discussion by the physician with the patient. And the patient should be involved in that decision-making process.
What have been the challenges to implementing the screening?
Well, up to 8,000 people a year commence on hydroxychloroquine in England, and that means there's about 300,000 people currently on hydroxychloroquine. So it's a large number of patients. All those patients requiring multiple scans is difficult to manage. And then that all needs to be done in consultation with the patient so they don't get too anxious, and explaining things to the patients and involving patients in their own care and management. So all those things together make it quite a challenging thing to put in place in already an overstretched NHS.
Do you feel this screening might be carried out by a suitably trained practitioner in the primary care community?
I think there is a really important role of optometrists. We have in our hospital probably as many more optometrists than we have consultant ophthalmologists. And our service wouldn't run, essentially, in almost every retinal aspect of the service wouldn't run if we didn't have optometrists. So even though it's set in a hospital, at the moment, it's recommended that there's some sort of virtual setup so that optometrists are involved. It's just that currently it's recommended that there's oversight by consultant ophthalmologists as well. But these things usually take a little bit of time and evolve. Most of the treatments and the ways we've been doing treatments have done that over the years. They've gradually moved from being consultant-delivered to consultant-led. Sometimes patients will go to their optometrist with an eye problem, as if, you know, not to get new glasses, but they'll say, my vision isn't that great, for example. Maybe it's something that they should be aware of to ask about hydroxychloroquine, because they could have normal central visual acuity, which is normally the only sort of vision that's measured, and have some defects, even if they have an OCT scan, but definitely on fundus examination, not show anything abnormal, and yet have or be in the process of having their retinas poisoned by this drug. And there's potential for great benefit, because if there are patients who are on this drug and the prescribing physician isn't fully aware of the guidelines, then the optometrist has the capacity, if he knows about the sorts of tests that are most useful, to A, maybe conduct those tests and provide the right information to the referring centre and provide some level of urgency if needed to make sure that patient is seen appropriately. So firstly, to speak to the patient and let them know about their concerns and fears without frightening the patient too much. Secondly, the patient should already have been involved in the screening service. So everybody on hydroxychloroquine should be involved in the screening service. So if they suspected something, then they would ask for their existing screening service to review the patient. If for some reason there was somebody who wasn't in the screening service, then the optometrist should refer the patient to the local eye hospital. The spectral domain OCT, some optometrists have, but the autofluorescence image, they don't always have. In the future, it may be that as technology evolves and more of these machines are available outside, then the screening could move outside. And in addition, there may be advances in technology, including artificial intelligence, which might help that process as well. The key learning points, I guess, one would be to be aware of hydroxychloroquine toxicity, that you won't necessarily see the impact of it when you look at the fundus. It would be really, really rare now to see what we used to know as the classical findings of hydroxychloroquine toxicity when people used to come in quite late. We wouldn't see that now on a fundus picture, because you would really hope to get people a long time before you saw those. So patients might come in to see their optometrist, have no signs of any fundus abnormalities, and actually when the optometrist checks them and does their refraction, they get 20/20 vision. The visual changes that they get aren't necessarily with acuity, but consist of paracentral scotomas or metamorphopsia or colour changes, and so they won't necessarily be picked up. And then with a normal fundus image, and even potentially with a normal OCT scan, they could potentially end up being reassured that nothing was wrong, unless the optometrist was aware about the potential impact of drugs that they were on. So that would be the first learning point, I guess. And the second learning point is that all patients on hydroxychloroquine should be getting regular screening. So even if you had somebody who came in, is asymptomatic, wasn't having any visual problems, has good central vision, they should have had a baseline screening. And after 5 years of being on hydroxychloroquine, they should have annual screening.
And that brings this edition of Advances in Eye Care to a close. As always, we value your input, so please do send us feedback on what you've heard today, as well as any suggestions you have for future content. You can contact us by email, inquiries@docket.info, or tweet us at docketinfo. If you'd like to find out more about what we've discussed today, remember you can find references and further reading for all topics by visiting the website. That's all from me, Jeff Watts. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with the next edition of Advances in Eye Care.